I'm told the number one fear people have is speaking in public. It's the one fear I don't have. Join me for the Love Speak series, where we leave fear behind and we speak love. Loving our story, loving speaking, doing what we love, loving each other, and loving ourselves. Our stories are what connect us and make us better humans. So join me and my Love Speaks friends for some stories, some laughs, some inspiration, some speaker tips, and some unexpected truth. It's the Love Speaks series, where a little bit of love goes a long way.
Welcome to the Love Speaks series. Here's your host, Sally Lou Loveman.
Oh, I just feel all kinds of tingles today and magic and like mystery and just such coolness because today we're speaking about enlightenment. And my guest, Val Genghis, is a meditation expert. She is the author of, love this title, Enlightenment is Sexy. She is a self-proclaimed troublemaker, which makes me love her oh so much more. And she's here to tell us how transcendental meditation saved her life and how you too can be sexy if you have enlightenment in your life. Please help me welcome my friend Val. Hi, Val.
Hi. That was like the best intro ever.
So truth be told, Val does not live in Chicago. She's got – Chicago is like a major source of her home, and you love it, and you've spent a lot of time here, and you've lived here. Did you grow up here, by the way?
Oh, grew up in the suburbs.
Okay. So clearly it is home. Okay. But you're not living here full time right now at all. And we had this scheduled – and then there were so many technical difficulties for the first time ever at Mystery Street Recording Company. So we don't know why. We think it's because you were in the country, but whatever. And all I can say is I am so glad for all those troubles because now you're sitting here in front of me, which is way better than any other phone line could ever be. So
way
thank
better.
You. Yeah. I'm so excited. We met 9 years ago, I think. It was 2011 when the Oprah Winfrey Show ended. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I immediately liked you, immediately. Like, it was an instant thing. But Val came to Harpo Studios to help us with the training when Oprah gave us transcendental meditation training. And she was someone that I looked at and I was like, okay, well, she doesn't look like me. I wish I looked like her. But, like, you felt like someone that was like, oh, I can relate to you. And so immediately I wanted to know more about you. But before we get to the whole like Oprah thing, because that's way after your moment when, you know, you lost your mom, you were just going through so much pain. You couldn't sleep. You were smoking a lot of pot. You were just like, ugh, life is not clear and brilliant and fun. My mom's gone. What do I do? What was that moment that changed?
Well, first of all, I had always been an extremely happy person. I didn't feel a lot of darkness in my life, even though my mom was sick and there was a lot going on. I just was able to rise above it. But when she died, I was gutted. Yeah. There was no rising above anything. I slipped into a level of depression that I never knew existed. And I couldn't, it was like I was in a black box and I could not get out no matter what I did. There was like no escape.
Yeah.
So I think for me, I got pushed all the way to the edge and I just.
But you tried to escape. You were.
I tried, but nothing worked.
Right. But what were you trying? Like you were smoking pot. Okay. What else were you doing?
Smoking pot and my mom actually, before she died, gave me a bottle of Xanax and she was like, you're going to need this.
Aww.
Because I had so much anxiety as like the time was approaching.
Yeah.
And that didn't work either. Like nothing could curb my anxiety and depression. It's like there was no way out except going in. So I can remember feeling suicidal and really at my breaking point and just being in the bathroom one day and saying, God, either help me live or help me die because I'm done. It was like I was dead already.
Right.
And it was only a couple weeks later that I learned transcendental meditation with Carla Brown, our teacher.
Our teacher.
And in one meditation, I went from that suicidal, dark, horrible place to opening my eyes. And I just felt completely like I had been reborn. Mm-hmm. I was like in a new world. And I couldn't completely understand what was happening at the time, but I knew when I opened my eyes, the colors seemed different, the air felt different, the sounds were different. I had like pulled myself out of the darkness in 20 minutes.
You write in your book how you felt the joy and gratitude for simply having been born. And that suddenly you could see everything more clear and that this was going to be an amazing ride. So what got you from depression to darkness to even going to get trained in transcendental meditation? Like, what was that?
It was like a series of events that I did not see coming. I had no idea what TM was.
Right.
I had never thought about meditating. It was nothing that ever had occurred to me. But I went to a dinner party. My friend like begged me to leave the house and just come to his like work dinner event. And I was talking to one of the gentlemen that was there and I couldn't stop crying. And I said, I have a sleeping disorder. I'm really depressed. I think I need to go into a hospital. And this was like with a total stranger.
Right.
And he said to my friend, you need to pay for her to learn TM, get her, just set the whole thing up for her because she is like non-functioning.
Right.
And maybe she'll get some sleep and that'll help her.
Well, being sleep deprived can make people go absolutely,
absolutely
crazy. Absolutely. And so.
And I was.
And that on top of your grief was just a mix for bad things to happen. So
absolutely.
What an amazing, divine moment that was, obviously, for someone to say that because I know, having been trained in it just soon after you were trained in it, my life has changed completely. Like, mm-hmm. I riddled with anxiety all the time. I still struggle with it. It doesn't go away. But it doing meditation, TM in particular, because that's the one I practice, it just accumulates. And so all of a sudden, even when you're not in the moment of this transcendental moment, which you took to immediately, which I find that just suits you because some people don't take to it right away, but took to it.
Everyone has a different path with this.
Exactly.
But for me, I think it's because I was so desperate. And most people aren't coming to it that gutted.
Yeah. Well, in your book, I have it here because, first of all, let me just tell you, I love the cover. Is this you?
No,
you're not on the cover?
No, but my book cover designer purposely did that.
It looks like you or Taylor Swift, so I'm not sure. I always see Taylor Swift on your cover. And it's Enlightenment is Sexy, Every Woman's Guide to a Magical Life. And Val is all about magic, and I love magic. Not the kind you can explain, the kind that just you can't explain and that just gives you shivers and goosebumps that you know is truth and divine. It's divine. So you were writing, you said, I started a company I love, advanced my daily meditation practice, which is the backbone of my existence, road tripped all over the country, wrote this book, realized my love of skydiving, and met a group of people who I consider to be my soul family. I finally became the person I always wanted to be. I became whole. Prior to my inner pilgrimage, it felt like I was just spinning my wheels. I was generally a happy camper, but often enough, a bit confused. And so it's like you went from struggling to, oh, this is what life is. This is what I'm supposed to be doing. And to me, that message, wouldn't everyone want to sign up for that?
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, I received a miracle, okay? It was like grace just fell on me. And then life started taking care of itself. I didn't need to worry like, oh, what's going to happen? What am I going to do? Like, those thoughts kind of went away. They disappeared because everything was happening to me, for me, and I just kept stepping into it.
Your stories in the book are just hysterical, and I'm all about a story, and they're like, oh, it's meant to be. Oh, it's a sign. And most of my family like rolls their eyes at me. And so I'm like laughing, going like, oh my God, Winona Judd showed up. Your mom's favorite singer.
Like, yeah, I mean, those things cannot just be random.
They can't be random.
How could I have run into Winona Judd at 3 o'clock in the morning at a Foo Fighters show at the Metro? Like, why would that have happened right after I told my mom, I told her before she died, you need to stay in contact with me through music. And she was her favorite. I mean, it was like an ongoing joke.
This right, because she rewatched her performance
on Oprah.
On Oprah, right.
And it was crazy. And now I've run into Wynonna Judd like 4 or 5 times. She took my book on stage and like talked about it to the whole crowd. Like it won't stop. It's my mom.
Your mom is channeling through Wynonna.
She is.
You know, it's really interesting that you said that about telling your mom. And maybe you must have said this to me because I lost my dad it'll be five years. And on his beautiful departure, because it was literally the most beautiful passing ever of all 20 of us surrounding him and just telling him how loved he was and listening to Karen Carpenter's Close to You.
Like it, oh, my God, like, I love that.
And that Close to You song comes on all the time. And it's not a very, you know, overplayed song. It's from the 70s. But anyway, I put my cross in his hand and I said, this is not over. I want you to be in touch with me daily. So
I love it.
This is not over. I wonder if I learned that from you subliminally, or I can't even say that word. I wonder if you had said that. I wonder if I read that. I don't know, but if
it works.
It's from you, thank you, because I said it. And when we speak things into the universe and when we believe in them, I mean, my dad's name was Billy and his mom called him B as a nickname. I always thought it was the initial B, but it was actually the B, B-E-E, because he was as busy as a bee. And literally the day after he died, I was at the church with my clipboard, with my sister, like working on all the arrangements. And this little bee would not leave my jacket,
my
clipboard. And it wasn't just like a little like normal bee. It was like a cute little bee. Mm-hmm. Like I didn't want it to leave and I shooed it away. And so I'm like, it's happening, right?
Yeah.
And there's tons of stories that I write about and talk about. And I think that's so cool. So how has your relationship changed with your mom?
Well, after I started meditating the first thing I did was sleep for 2 straight weeks. So then things really started coming back together because I was so rested. But shortly then after, I started having these types of dreams where you're awake. I mean, I feel like my mom showed me heaven. I was able to have discussions with her. She told me I was going to write a book. She was going to help me. She showed me the typewriter. And
explain that.
I just was able to.
No, how did she show you the typewriter?
She explained, I know this sounds so abstract, but she explained to me that even in heaven, or I don't think she called it heaven, her work continued because she was a writer. Okay. She had published 4 books. She was a poet and pretty prominent in Chicago, did a lot of poetry readings.
That. Very cool.
Yeah, so she was the speaker. She was the writer.
Okay.
I was in the restaurant and bar business.
Right.
Like, no thought of me ever writing. And she told me that her work was continuing, and she showed me that she had a typewriter and a desk, and I could see her fingers hitting the keys, and she said, I'm going to write through you. And I was like, what?
Oh, I just got the chills.
And then, well, she did, because I'm not a writer.
Oh, my God.
And I felt like that whole book was channeled.
Yes.
Like, I can remember sitting at the coffee shop and watching my fingers on my computer and wondering, who's typing right now? Because I swear to God, I had never written anything. And the first blog that I wrote ended up in a best-selling book. And I hadn't written anything since college.
Okay. And was that a blog that you wrote after meditation?
Yeah. Okay. All of this is after meditating.
It's like pre-meditation, post-meditation, which is why it's sexy? What's the sexy part?
Well, I think the sexy part is when you have these types of experiences, you become more confident.
Exactly.
You're grounded. You know who you are and why you're here on this earth. And to me, that's sexy.
There's nothing more sexy than truth. Like, truth is the sexiest mother effer ever. And, like, that is what you just described, is truth.
Well, you live your truth. It's very difficult, I think, after you have an experience like this, to be, like, a phony baloney.
You can't.
You can't because it's just, you can't go back. I always say that, too.
Right.
It's too late. So to me, that's very attractive in both men and women.
Oh, extremely, extremely. It is the most attractive thing. Okay, so your mom is writing through you. That is just so freaking cool. And I wanted to say to anyone listening, for those of you who've lost anyone, and we all have, and it's so difficult, and you think about the parents that have lost children, I have so many people I pray for who have lost children, and it just doesn't make sense. And then for us now in middle age, we're losing our parents and all of these things. There is a relationship post this world that we are in, this world that
Absolutely.
We're in right now. And that world is different than the world that we're in right now, but it is as real and as comforting. And if anyone's listening, rolling their eyes, I just invite you to try meditation, to try prayer, and open up that vessel, because you can't open the vessel without the work here on earth.
That's right.
And that is through...
It's a two-way street.
Yeah.
And yeah, prayer and meditation, those are my two...
Right.
Those are two major parts of my world, because it just... It keeps me so grounded and in that space where I feel like I'm in the flow all the time. And again, I don't have to worry about like the day-to-day stuff, because I feel like I'm part of the bigger picture and I'm being carried. So it allows me to live a stress-free life almost in a way. It takes a lot to really stress me out now.
You know what it sounds like to me? I just had this conversation with a family member. You are being present. You're not worried about the past. You're not worried about the future. You are being present. And being present is the best way to avoid anxiousness mm-hmm. or anxiety, because you're not worrying it. You're almost, in some ways, you're almost like winging it, which to me, I think that's a sort of a new thing I'm trying to work towards.
It's a fun way to live.
It really is, because like I have work coming up for my book and speeches, and somebody said to me, Sally, just wing it. You're best when you wing it. And I was like, you know, I really am. I like to be prepared, but I like the idea of winging it, because you don't put as much pressure on yourself to have to know everything, and you just rely on source.
Yeah, because it comes
you just
through you.
Open up your vessel and you're like, okay. And I'm not saying that you or I are any more blessed than anyone else on the street in the world.
No, this is for all of
us. It's for everyone. You just have to open the source. You have to open the vessel.
That's right. And
so how can people do that? If they're like, oh God, this is crazy. It's never going to work for me.
Well, it's funny.
What's the first step?
Well, this is what my whole next book is about.
Oh, yay.
So there's things that happen to us, and there's things that we can do to get to this point. You know, pain is a wonderful motivator.
It sure is.
And so when you feel enough pain, that can break you right open. And like when my mom died, I thought my life was over. But really, my life had just begun.
You get to know yourself real well when your heart's broken.
Right, because when you're walking like on Easy Street, you're not paying attention
right.
as much. But eventually, right. like everything becomes an easy street. But first, you got to go through, you know, all these ups and downs and try and figure it out and get yourself situated. This is a long process, because you will live differently than everybody else. So meditation, yoga, having a simple life, I think is a big one.
Like, how have you simplified your life?
Well, after this experience, and I started working with you guys at Harpo for, I think
I want to get back to that at some point, but yeah.
I think it was like almost 2 years, wasn't I there? A year and a half?
I have no idea.
Anyways,
it was 9 years ago.
It was a long time. And then I decided, you know what? I don't want to live in the city anymore. I want to move out to the country and write my book and just live an extremely simple life and see how I do. So I sold all my stuff, gave away my purses and all these shoes, rented out my condo in the city, and moved to Iowa on 14 acres out in the middle of nowhere.
Fairfield,
Iowa. Didn't know anybody. I think I knew like one person. Sat down and every day, same table, same coffee shop, I just wrote my book.
Or your mom wrote your book.
Or my mom wrote my book. Simple life. Cute little, like, it was like a small cedar house out in the country. Everything was calm. I was one with nature. Yeah. I didn't have any distractions because I wasn't even working. I was just working on my book. And
how were you able to afford that? Had you saved money?
I used
money?
My savings and sold everything
yeah.
I
oh,
owned,
you
basically.
Sold everything. Right, right, right.
I knew I had like 6 months, especially living out there. The cost of living
is nothing.
Is like literally nothing.
Right.
So I noticed when I had less stuff, more time in nature, and hardly any distractions, oh, then the magic was really there.
Right, right.
And I thought, this is a nice way to live.
Right, Right.
I had never done that before.
So you dip into that every once in a while, right? Like you told me earlier in another conversation that you're building a cabin in Fairfield.
Yeah, so, I need that now in my life.
So you need that. But you're not there full time, right? You do come.
I'm not there full time.
Right.
I think it's good now. I've come to a place where it's good to be in nature and have that silence and then go take it out back into the real world, like back into a city or whatever. And then back and forth, back and forth. It feels balanced to me.
You always knew you were different, right? And you had tell us about when you went to see your mom's doctor and how that changed things for you. And tell us the age you were.
When I saw my mom's doctor?
When he gave you a name for what you had.
Oh, yes. So I always felt really intuitive. And my mom encouraged this like magical living because she was that way.
Right.
She didn't want me to be like other people. She wanted me to be my own person. And the rules kind of like didn't apply to us because she didn't want to follow the rules of society. So,
and you don't either. So
no,
you
I
are
don't.
Her child.
But, I mean, I do it in a quiet way. But yeah, I feel like I make my own reality.
Right.
So she set she planted the seeds for this. But the older I was getting, I was more and more intuitive. And I could meet someone and know a lot about them or just know about situations. And so I thought I was crazy.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, oh my, you're crazy. Like, you shouldn't know these things. And it was a little bit disturbing. And then I went to my mom's doctor and I told him everything that was going on. And he like,
how old were you?
I think I was like, in my early 20s.
Okay.
And he like celebrated the fact that I had this. Like he told me this is special. This is like a really great thing. And he spent a lot of time talking to me about intuition and how like higher states of consciousness and all of that. And I started embracing it more and more.
That's so cool.
But really, it wasn't until after I started meditating that I really full force, like I trust it now.
Yeah, but it wasn't that nice that you could feel like, oh, I'm not crazy and there is a name for this and I am a bit of an empath, you know, like you.
Yeah, like I didn't know what that was before.
Yeah.
I just knew I was sensitive.
Do you, very, and highly tuned. Do you ever now at this stage get scared that you could go too deep?
Well, I have because I went on a really long meditation course and I was meditating like 8 hours a day and it was just too much for me. I didn't know that that was a thing either.
Yeah.
I mean, I really went into all this blind. And I think all the trauma and like when you're a sensitive person, I think you carry a lot of trauma in your body because you're absorbing everything.
Right.
And because I was meditating for so long, so many days in a row, it came just crashing out of my body. And I was sick for like over a year.
Well, that's interesting to me because I have been told and heard many, many times that when people start meditating, their health gets better. So why did your health get worse in that moment? That makes no sense to me. But or was it just a real big, huge – you went too deep?
I think it was too much for me. Yeah. I think I'm spiritually sensitive. Uh-huh. I have experiences that can be triggered from doing – this or that. I have to be careful.
Yeah.
And it just, I had like a major spiritual emergency. That's what they're called. And it just, I was the only one out of 50 people that this happened to. So I'm not on the course.
Yeah.
And, but now I'm glad that it happened because it just made me stronger. It like blew out all that stuff at once. But that's dangerous, you know?
It's dangerous. It is dangerous. But in the end, you had to suffer a bit for some health problems, I'm sure, for over that year. And then now you are better for it.
I'm better for it. I got a master's degree in transpersonal psychology because I wanted to know what happened to me.
Right.
I literally felt like I had been set on fire from the inside out. But now I know throughout time this has happened to all sorts of people.
So you live from the inside out. That's where you said the juice is. That's where the goodies live. That's where all the good stuff is.
Yes.
You live from the inside out. So whether you're on fire on the inside or a warm, beautiful, stoked,
I'm not on fire anymore. Thank God.
No, I know, but you were. So that's still the inside and it had to come out through the inside.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us a little bit more about living that inside out life that you live.
I think you make different decisions than most people. I like to be alone a lot. I never got married, don't have kids. I tend to need that like silence and alone time because my inner world feels so rich.
Yes.
So sometimes it's like a little bit difficult. I don't find the external world as exciting as what's going on internally. So that can cause like a little confusion. But I feel like I can go anywhere and do anything. And I feel like it's kind of like a carnival ride inside of me or something.
Oh, that's so beautiful. It's such a, as a meditator, I hear you and I understand your language. For those who don't meditate, who might be listening, it's really hard to understand. It's so hard. I've been practicing just any kind of mindfulness since energy healing, I would call it, since 22. I was diagnosed with a autoimmune disease. And so in trying to help cure that, or not cure it because it can't be cured, but to handle it, I started to experience all kinds of cool things from acupuncture to Reiki to visualizing, all that stuff. So I come to it even before you all showed up at the Oprah Winfrey Show. I was in a meeting with 12 staffers and our president. Oprah was not there. And I said, because we were talking about how to make our company great. Mm-hmm. It was already great, but it's the we were reading the book Good to Great. And so I said, I think that we should all learn how to meditate, mm-hmm. have someone come in and train us, and meditate together.
Oh, my God. That was your idea?
Yeah, it was.
It's amazing.
No, but it wasn't, right? Okay, hold on. That was like 2005, okay?
Okay.
And so everyone looked at me except for two people, Novana and Jill, like I was crazy because we didn't have time to pee, okay?
Right.
How are we going to meditate? But because I'd had that experience since 22 years old and know that the world is, you know, out there and that all we had to do was just get trained to do it, it didn't happen. But it happened in 2011 or 12, whenever it happened. And Oprah wasn't even in the meeting. She didn't even hear me say it. I didn't go further because I was super embarrassed. I was really embarrassed. I was like, oh my God, why do I open my mouth in meetings? This is so silly, which is such a great reminder to everyone. And I'm not calling myself a pioneer, but I do have empathic moments in my life too, maybe not as strong as yours.
No, absolutely. You stood out from the whole crew. Like I knew that I could talk to you about this stuff. I knew that you understood what was happening. It was obvious to me.
Oh, thank you. And it was obvious to me the kind of person you were. But I look back on that and I don't say like, oh, it was my idea, not Oprah's. Like, obviously, I'm not saying that. But I am saying that I was tuned in a long time ago. And I believe that when we say things and people look at us like we're crazy, like, oh, I said, I'm going to write a book. And people thought, oh, yeah, right.
Oh, that's like my whole life.
Right. These are the things, the eye rollers, the people that don't believe you. Instead of feeling like you are stupid or crazy, you got to remember that your idea is probably a really good one and they're just not ready for it yet.
And I also believe our ideas aren't random. I think they're placed in us, yeah. like by God or whatever, the universe. And so to have that strength inside, that inner core that's solid, that makes you unshakable, then you can go take your ideas out in the world because you're not going to be like broken down by somebody else's opinion. You won't even care.
You won't care. But that's the thing. You got to get to that place where you're so sure of it or you feel so not even sure of it. You just feel so centered, like the way you feel, so in your purpose and so in your present moment that you're okay with it and that you don't feel like the odd one, the oddball saying something that everyone rolls their eyes at.
And no, I mean, I came out of the spiritual closet like probably when I started working with you guys and I was like, I'm not hiding this.
Yeah.
Anymore.
I love that. It was out of the spiritual closet.
But it's true because I had this like secret world with my mom. But I couldn't tell other people because they would roll their eyes.
They would
at
roll
me.
Their eyes.
And
right.
I got sick of people telling me I was crazy.
Right, right. So tell us about the story, and I know it, but I love hearing it, about when you were asked to come to Harpo and help out and what Oprah said.
Well, at first I turned the job down because I was feeling so good. I thought, well, I'm going to go open a bar. That's like all I've ever done, that's what I know to do. Now, I was a religious studies major and I loved spirituality my whole life, but I never thought of it like as a career. So my TM teacher was like, you're not going to go open a bar. I mean, she recognized what had happened to me. I just didn't understand it. So through a series of events, the Winona Judd story and all the stuff that happened, I decided, okay, I'll go work at Harpo. And then it was a Friday. It was my first day at work. I had no idea why I was there. They didn't explain what I was going to be doing. And they told me to go into the screening room and tell my story, tell what had happened to me with my mom passing away and learning TM and all of that. And when I walked into the screening room, it was just Oprah and Sherry.
Sherry Salata.
Sherry Salata. And
our former president and executive producer. Okay, go on.
Yeah, so it was like no one in the room but us, like all those empty seats.
Right.
And next thing I knew, I was like totally a speaker. I mean, I wasn't trying. I just was telling my story. But it felt like something was working through me. I mean, I felt very alive and very... like my words were important and that they were both hearing me and feeling it.
Yes.
And I had zero fear and I had no public speaking experience at all.
Okay. So one of the things I say and anyone that, there are people out there saying it for me right now, if you listen to me enough, but I always say that fear has no access when you're in your purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what was happening to you. You were in your purpose. And so there was no fear. You didn't care who you were speaking to. Okay, it happened to be Oprah Winfrey.
I didn't.
But like it didn't matter.
It didn't matter. And it's weird because I had been watching her on TV, you know, for a long time. But it wasn't like adding up that she was someone like special or different than me. I just like loved them and was thinking, well, maybe this will help them. Like, because I had a miracle in my life. So I told
them. So you want to share that?
I just wanted to share it. And plus, I didn't have time to think about it because they never told me what the heck I was going to be doing at work.
That happens a lot.
and then Oprah said to Sherry, like, I want what that girl has. And I said, well, of course you're going to have it because you're going to meditate. Yeah. Like, I just assumed.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so then that was
I want what that girl has. And, you know, it's like that whole, I want what she's having. And guess what? We all do. And it's not that hard.
It's not. And it can happen to you, like without you even trying, or you can make an effort to move towards it. And it can happen that way too. But it's all about like transformation in your life. It's a spiritual transformation.
What are the signs? What are the signs that you need it? What are those? You have like seven signs of enlightenment. I know that and I want to hear that. But like, what are the signs that is like, okay, you need to stop and maybe take some time for mindfulness and meditation?
Well, first of all, I think everyone should meditate. Do some form of meditation, even if you're like quietly walking through nature. I mean, just something.
Right.
Because this world is out of control and there's like way too many distractions that's pulling you away from, you know, like the force that really runs everything. And that's what you want to tap into. And I think if you're like always trying to figure everything out, like you need to know, like, why did that happen? And why does this keep happening? And like going down that rabbit hole of never ending questions about why.
Mystery is sometimes a wonderful thing.
Yeah. And you just live in it. So then you don't even care why. It's just happening to you. It's not like for any reason. And of course, if you have anxiety, or you're not sleeping, or you just generally feel flat or unhappy, it's time to make a change.
Right. Well, these, you know, the kids that are growing up in this age of texting and social media and all of it, you know, and of course I'm as hooked to it as they are, but they really are, and they don't know the other piece of it. They didn't have the childhood that we all had of being outside and being in nature and not being distracted by 700 accounts that they have to keep up with.
And oh my goodness, it's crazy.
Not only keep up with all of them, but also respond to all of them. Like I watch my young niece, you know, and my friend's young daughter having to reply to every TikTok, every Snapchat, every this, every that. It's like, oh my God, the amount of consumption is just so much where they could actually be outside just sitting in the grass thinking about nature, you know, and it's such
very
a
freaky
difference. And I have Mona Antoine, who was a Harpo staff member who you may or may not know, but she started a wonderful, and she's done the podcast with me, mindfulness leader, which is teaching Chicago Public City Schools kids, students, mindfulness. And it's a 23-step program, and she's changing the lives, been recognized by the White House, the whole thing, changing lives. If our kids don't practice mindfulness or meditation, we already have an epidemic of anxiety and suicide and all of that. And so I just believe that the more we get this message out to people and sharing your story, story is the only way to relieve pain, right? Mm-hmm. Because when you hear stories, you don't feel alone. You feel connected. And by you telling your story to the people at Harpo and now telling it to all the people through your book and through your podcast and through everything, you're making a difference. So for that, I am so grateful. And I'm so hoping to do the same because my life completely changed from meditation.
Yours, yeah, and it's so simple. You know, it's like, it's no big deal. I used to say, if I would have learned how to meditate when I was a little kid, I probably would have gotten straight A's in school.
Yes.
Like all of a sudden I could learn. It was so much easier for me to learn. I could just like absorb information. And
you're literally fine tuning your frontal cortex, your brain. You're giving it a massage. You feel lifted. When I'm a super napper. Like I love napping. But I don't nap anymore. I meditate instead. Mm-hmm. And I feel so much better.
Yeah. I mean, that is like the ultimate nap.
It is the ultimate nap. Right.
It's tough for kids and for people living in this world. And, you know, we're all doing the best that we can. But I just like have found some tricks that just make the ride so much smoother.
Tell us the tricks.
Well, it's meditating, yeah. Really, because once you start, for me, okay, once I started that and had these big shifts in my life, it's like I didn't feel like looking at my phone. Like I didn't feel like watching TV. Like you start to not care about stuff like that because it's not like important to you. You don't feel addicted to it or
because
something.
Because smoking pot or looking at your phone or eating a bowl of ice cream is a distraction to the fact that you don't feel full and you feel, I mean, even though sometimes I can look at my Instagram and feel really full because I think it's fun, but sometimes it's exhausting. So these are things that are you're looking for to fill you up. But now because of the meditation training and how deep you've gone, you don't need them at all and you don't need them as much.
Well, and those distractions are just taking you away again from God, the universe, whatever the source of energy that is everything. And that's the opposite of what you want to be doing.
Right.
You want to be open to that because that is going to give you everything. It's going to help you make good decisions. It's going to help you stay grounded and calm. And that's what you want. All this other stuff is just like a bunch of mumbo jumbo.
It's distraction.
It's distraction.
Noise. Are you faithful to a religion?
I was raised Greek Orthodox. My mom was Catholic, and she'd take me to church, too. I was a theology major. I went to a Catholic high school, Catholic university. But after I learned to meditate, I felt like I didn't need a middleman. Like, I could just go straight to God.
That's such a good soundbite.
It was like I had it. I was given the gift of being able to, like, pick up the phone and call God just by closing my eyes.
Yeah.
So I like going to church I love all religions because that's like something that's in me, but I don't feel like I need it.
Right. I love that.
It's not
you
about
don't
faith.
Need a middleman.
It's not about faith. I know. Yeah. I know. I feel it every single day.
Are you scared of death?
No.
Why? Obviously, I know why, but tell us why. I mean, you just answered it.
Well, since my mom died, I've had like 8 or 9 more deaths in my family. I've been able to handle them really well.
Your uncle. You write about your uncle.
Uncle died, 2 uncles, an aunt, grandparents, my brother, my favorite cousin. It's like the whole 9 yards. And I cannot believe how I can handle death now compared to when my mom died. I mean, when she died, it was over. Now, I feel like I can help people die. I feel like I understand death. I feel like every time I meditate, I'm having like a little bit of a near-death experience. The dreams helped me.
Mm-hmm.
So no, I'm not scared. I'm kind of looking forward to it.
So interesting.
Because it's going to be
powerful.
Beautiful.
So powerful.
And we're all going to die. I mean,
we are.
You're not going to make it out alive. So I think it's better to embrace it and think about, like, it's going to be okay and learn. Near-death experiences are a great way to get over your phobia of death.
Totally. Have you ever read Brian Weiss's
Many
Lives, Many Masters?
Yes, yeah. I love him.
That really helped me. That really helped me with my anxiety and fear of death. How did your mom raise you to be a child of God? You write that a lot in your book.
She was a former nun, Catholic, like I said before.
Your mom is so cool. Patty?
Patricia.
Yep.
She was very interested in mysticism, so like direct connections with God and studying the mystics and talking to me about them. And so she just over and over again was saying, like, these people have these experiences. You can know God. You don't have to, like, it's not this fantasy in your head. You can actually know God. And she told me that my whole life. And she said, like, you are a child of God. Like, you have to know that. And I mean, it was told to me so many times that I do know it.
You believed it. And you lived it. You felt it.
I felt it. And then I started having experiences where, like, I knew, like, I knew, like, I knew.
Right. It's just so, you can't deny it when you feel it. It's very hard to explain. But it's kind of like meditation. When you're in the meditation and you feel that lift, that freedom, that comfort, it's like a warm blanket. Mm-hmm. It's like the happiest place. But you know what the truth is for anyone that has the trouble with the word God or belief in God, I believe in God, but I believe in me. And mm-hmm. so I believe that God is within me, mm-hmm. Just like he or she is within you and you and you and you, whoever's listening. And when you go within through meditation, you are at the core of who you are, your truth, your self. And there is nothing more beautiful than that. And that is my home. That's my home base.
Oh, my God. I have chills. Beautifully
said.
It's
my best friend. Mm-hmm. She is my best friend. Meditation is my best friend because it's me. Mm-hmm. And that's God. That's the source. That's, you know, when we see, it's like Les Mis, my favorite, to see another person is to see the face of God. Mm-hmm. I think there's a love part in there, but I can't remember. To love another person is to see mm-hmm. the face of God. And that's what God is to me, and that's to me what meditation is. It really just tunes you into a force that is greater than anyone, but that is literally centered right in your soul.
That is so perfect,
yeah.
What you've said. And I think for me, I got to the point where I was seeing God in, you know, the squirrels and the trees and everywhere. I just could not believe how beautiful this world was and like how lucky I was to be here. And that certainly was not the feeling I had before.
Yeah. Do you ever, I wonder if you do this because I do this all the time. Like when I see my dad in whatever sign it is, whether it's a number or a song or a bee or whatever it is, and there have been plenty, I'm like, hey, Dad. And I just keep moving. Mm-hmm. And it's like, not like, I mean, there are times where I'm like, oh my God, it's him and he's arrived and he's talking to me. But then there's times where I'm like, hey, Dad.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's been my experience that they're like right next to you. Like, yes. It's like walking through the door. They're right there. But you can't see them. Like, we're not built for that. We would probably be like schizophrenic if we could see everything.
Right.
So, but I feel like all my family members that have died, they're very close to me. I mean, I feel...
You've suffered a lot of loss in a very short amount of time. That's a lot of people.
Yeah, like a death train just like came rolling through our family.
My God.
But I could handle it, which shocked me.
Who's left? Do you have siblings left?
My dad.
Okay, your dad. Okay.
Yeah, just my dad. And I have an aunt left. And of course, some cousins.
Yeah.
But like the major group, they're all gone. But I'm assuming, you know... That's the way it was planned. I mean, I can't argue with God's plan. I have to accept that that's how it was supposed to be. I mean, I accept the good, the bad, the ugly. It's all the same to me now.
Right. Because a lot of us, you know, you say, how, why, how? We don't know.
That's going back to that. Like, I don't feel like I need to know everything anymore.
Right.
I just accept it.
Something happened to me recently. I felt really unseen by someone, and it really made me sad. And I was like very sad. And my sister Cindy said, Sally Lou, maybe it's just going to be a mystery. Maybe that's why she doesn't want to see you. You don't know why. You don't have to know why. Mm-hmm. Leave it as a mystery. Now, I like truth. I love all that. I love to have the truth be told. I don't love tough conversations, but I think that they are of value when they can get us past something.
Mm-hmm.
This conversation is never going to happen for me, but when my sister said to me, just attribute it to mystery, and she is not a mystical person. Mm-hmm. It's so funny, although she does meditate now. I was like, thank you.
That's some solid advice.
It was some really good advice for me because I'm just like, okay, leave it to mystery. I'm good with that.
And it'll eventually reveal itself to you.
It always does. How can we protect ourselves from energy drainers? You talk about that a bit.
That was a big problem for me. I think that's probably why I focused on it in the book. I think you have to recognize what's happening. You will see an immediate shift in how you feel when you're around a person that's not good for you. You'll feel tired. You'll feel confused. Your mind like gets all jumbled up. And it's like their energy with your energy is not good. And some people survive just feeding off of people. Like, that's their MO.
It's a parasite.
Absolutely. And it could be someone in your family. I mean, this is a difficult thing to work through. But I think you get to the point where you feel so bad around certain people that you just have to make the decision, like, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
And if it's your family, like, maybe you stay in a hotel.
Pay attention to how your body feels. Your body is your storyteller. Like, if you all of a sudden feel the goosebumps and the shivers, that's truth.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, if you feel the stress and the pain, that's also truth. So
it is.
You got to really listen.
And I always say, like, you have to save yourself.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, you can't keep going back into that, you know, dipping into the same pond over and over, and you have the feeling over and over. It's like, when is it going to get through your thick skull? Like, this is not a good situation for you.
This is not good for me, right? Do you see mediums?
Yeah, I've seen a couple mediums. One in particular, after my mom died, she was so spot on and amazing and told me everything that was going to happen. She told me about my brother. She told me about another family member, and that also helped me tremendously, because the reason I was suicidal when my mom died is because I had it in my mind that she was, like, lost in space, and I had to, like, go find her.
Right.
It was totally delusional, but meditation, the medium, making things clear for me, and then having my own experiences, like, totally wiped that out of my mind. Yeah. I knew she was safe.
Yeah. You spend a lot of time in Fairfield, Iowa. Tell us, and I haven't been. I've known you nine years.
You can go. I know.
I'm like, I've been talking about it forever. I don't know why I haven't gone yet. My expectations are huge for it, so I need to lower them, because I'm like, I think I'm going to walk into the town and just go, oh my gosh! I picture it. I see it in my head. Tell people about Fairfield, Iowa.
Okay, so I chose to go there to write the book, my first book.
Right.
Okay, so I thought, you know, I'm going to go out in the country, the town meditates, it's going to be good vibes, it'll be perfect for me.
Well, that's the thing. The entire town meditates. How many times a day? Twice?
Twice a day, yeah. They have those big gold domes.
Right.
So people go in the domes, or they meditate in their house, but you know, most
people. The idea
people,
of the group all
it's
at once.
The group, they're, and you can feel it.
Yes.
I mean, you can definitely feel it.
Yeah.
So, what happened is when I got out there, I started meeting people, and like everyone was so interesting and kind of like a reflection of my mom that like had the depth and the level of spirituality that I was used to, and people that really went all in.
Are the people that live in the town people that were born and raised there, or do people come there to live there?
No, everyone I've met is like from New York or LA, Kansas City. They came from all over the place. Right. Different countries. I mean, it's a melting pot of people.
Right. So just the whole existence is super chill and like very grounded, I would imagine. Like even like if you go to a restaurant, it's no one's screaming at anyone about their reservation that they didn't get.
I do not feel like that town has that vibe at all. Now, you are in a small town in Iowa.
Right.
But it's very sophisticated for a small town. I mean, there's great restaurants. People are extremely intelligent. There's lots of artists and writers. And
that makes sense.
David Lynch has a school there.
Right.
I mean, There's famous people always coming through town. You're running into them. It's very, very different. It's a very magical town.
It's very magical. And I just love, I feel like everything about you has a little piece of magic with it. And I love that because I think that we all have magic that we can create. And I believe that magic happens when a talented group of people come together for a purpose led by a person who has that talent. That best describes Oprah, you know? But it also happens if you are leading your own self in a magical way and saying, you know, just let the cool stuff in, let the new stuff in. Nobody has – the people that I want in my life don't have to look like me, act like me, or think like me. I want to embrace people of all faiths, of all – you know, whatever it is, the diversity so that you can build – your own magic, like your own sense of being in this world in a mystical, cool way.
Yeah, I mean, it's total magical living. And I think when you start feeling this way, you have a lot of empathy for people. You feel a lot of love for all people, God's creatures. You want to help. Like, you become more selfless. And I think that makes for a much better life.
For sure. Okay, so you are working on another book.
Mm-hmm.
We sort of talked about it for a second, but what's the purpose of this next book?
The next book is 14 different ways that you can have a radical transformation like I did in my life. So half of the ways are things that can happen to you, like right. Losing a loved one, near-death experience, Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a chapter on that. And then there's the other half of the book are things—
Are you in a 12-step program?
No, but I studied it so I could write about it.
Exactly.
And I thought, like, this is a miracle worker, this program. It leads to radical transformation in people's lives.
The program you write about or the 12-step program?
The 12-step program.
Totally.
So I thought that was an important chapter to have. And then the other half of the book are things that you can actually do to bring on this type of transformation in your life. You know, like psilocybin-assisted therapy. That's a big one.
What is that?
They've been doing studies at Johns Hopkins on cancer patients that have a major fear of death and a fear about their diagnosis and all that. And they'll do psilocybin is like mushrooms.
Okay.
Like, so with a trained therapist, they'll take them through like a trip.
Yeah.
And people come out of that after one session and they have this experience like I had learning to meditate. They're not scared of death. They almost seem like enlightened or something.
Right.
And it's because the veil has been lifted.
Right.
So experiences like that, things that you could actually do to invoke this change in your life.
Right.
And I call it
right.
The change that changes everything.
The change that changes everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Very cool.
And
very
it's as cool. old as the hills. I mean, it's in the Bible. It's well, this is a thing. This is not like some made up new age. Well,
right. That's the
crap.
Thing. Like where we live in this world, like everyone's like, oh, we'll try this. No, this was started back.
Yeah,
long,
I mean,
long. This all predates this fad.
Right. This isn't about like losing 15 pounds or like sleeping with a crystal under your pillow. This is like your whole life is going to change.
Yeah. Do you have a daily prayer?
I always ask God to work through me and give me the strength to handle whatever he's going to give me.
It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. What do you, I always like to ask people, what do you love? What do you love? What season do you love the most? Season.
I used to love summer, but I kind of like winter and fall now.
Yeah.
I like the leaves and I love nature now, whereas before I could have cared less. And I like when it snows out and everything's pure white and you're like driving through it and it's just so silent. That is like one of my favorite moments with the seasons.
It's beautiful. What's your favorite time of day?
Sunset.
Sunset. I know you said you don't watch television, but is there any TV series that you happen to love?
No, I do watch a little TV. It's not like before where I always had it on.
Oh, yeah.
I just watched The Pharmacist on Netflix, and it was amazing.
I don't know about The Pharmacist.
It was really good.
I'm so deep in Cheer right now, I can't even handle it.
I saw one episode,
Monica.
And I was like, wow.
I'm obsessed with Monica. And of course, I love Schitt's Creek. But okay, The Pharmacist.
It was really good.
Okay.
And I liked, what's the show? They wear the red Cloaks, and it's on Hulu. It's my favorite.
You lost me. No, I don't do anything with cloaks. They scare me. It sounds
Handmaid's
like
Tale.
Handmaid's Tale. Thank you.
It is incredible.
It sounds like that. And I do need to watch that.
It is one of the best about series I've ever seen.
Like, I'm not Downton Abbey. I'm not like that. I'm also not Homeland. I just like fun little happy things like Schitt's Creek.
Okay. Well, Handmaid's Tale
is not happy.
But I feel like it could happen. And I like the religious aspect and like the psychological aspect. Yeah. It's pretty badass, that show.
Pretty badass. Yeah. Okay, what do you love the most about yourself?
I like my sense of adventure and this like freedom I feel inside. It feels really precious to me.
It's very precious. How does love speak through you? And how's love speaking to you today in this moment in Chicago?
I feel like I'm constantly thinking like how I can help people in my lives or in my life and just like what I can do next. And it feels like love. It doesn't feel like an agenda. It feels like, what can you do every day to like help someone and just be in that feeling of love, like I'm circulating it or something.
I think we'll end with that. That's absolutely beautiful. When we're in service to others, love speaks. That's the bottom line.
I always tell people, if you feel like crap, go out and help someone else. You'll feel better.
Always.
Always.
That is always what I tell my children, too. So I thank you, Valerie Genghis, author of Enlightenment is Sexy, soon to be author of your next book, which we don't know the title of it yet, but it's going to be 14 Ways to Transform Us and bring in more magic to our lives. I thank you so much. I'm so glad that the universe brought you to me.
I know. I'm glad the phone didn't work last time.
And I'm glad the phone didn't work. But I mean the universe that it brought to me in 2011. And I'm so grateful for you. Thanks, everybody. Read Enlightenment is Sexy. It's like she's talking right to you. So
thanks.
Read it.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Thank you, Val. I have loved speaking with you today, and I want to speak with you more. So follow me on all of my social platforms at Live Love Speaks on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And if you want more stories like the stories we speak here on the Love Speaks series podcast, go to lovespeaks.com and pick up a copy of my new book, Speak. Love your story, your audience is waiting to step up your speaking game and your human game. Check out my blog while you're there.
Sally Lou Loveman is a mom, speaker, author, former audience producer for The Oprah Winfrey Show, and founder of Love Speaks. Each week, Sally Lou and her crew have a conversation about how love speaks in their lives and how it can speak in yours. From kindness to composting, no topic is off limits. If you need a community to kickstart your heart, you need the Love Speaks series.
Thanks for listening. Your love speaks.